Hello, and welcome to the Movie Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll have a spoiler-filled discussion about a movie we think you'll enjoy. I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on Fahrenheit 451, and this is the 2018 version done for HBO. It is available on DVD. I know this because that's how we watched it. I like having copies and stuff, and it's also fun to, you know, compare this version that was done just recently versus the 1966 film versus the novel that was from 1953?
Yes, and that just popped into my head. One thing that this movie totally lacked, that the 66 movie did, the way that Ray Bradbury was saying in 53, he thought he dreamed up, and then a few weeks later, he saw somebody actually had.
With the earphones.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because there were some aspects where I thought this was faithful to the spirit of the book, if not the letter of the book.
Mm.
I thought they did a good job kind of with the salamanders, the firemen, having that spirit of the corps, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of that marching song, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And really building the camaraderie up. But this one also never had the professor.
No.
It had the wall TV kind of a thing and got the sentiment behind what Bradbury had done, but did it for the modern day where we had celebrity, you know, on TV and the social media aspects.
Well, and we had one full wall, and then we had like these panels on the side that the doorways were kind of between.
It gave the illusion of surround video.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't literally what they had there. And we never saw him watching, you know, the family.
Yeah.
But there was that aspect of the newscast, mm-hmm, and the internet celebrity aspect, if you will.
Well, they went a degree further, I would say, on it was all, whether it was real or not, more in the tone of reality TV.
Yeah.
Than entertainment.
Well, and again, him as, what was his rank?
He was more than just a fireman, but he wasn't captain yet.
There was a particular term they had for that, and I forget it off the top of my head, but as that role, he was like the spokesperson for that battalion or whatever, and he was a celebrity in and of himself.
Yeah, the face of the unit, which seemed to cause a bit of strife between him and Douglas.
Mm-hmm. Because Douglas was the one who eventually replaced him for all of 3 minutes.
Yeah, poor Douglas.
He went down in flames. Literally.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, the fans love Douglas. We got the heart emoji thing.
Yeah. Clarice was handled differently here.
Very differently for me.
And she never kind of went away. In the book, it was kind of whatever happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
In the 66 movie, it was, you know, handled a bit differently and stuff. And here, she was kind of an informant for the fire captain.
Yeah.
So I didn't think that worked quite as well.
In the book, she was a neighbor, but also, and it was in one of the back matter pieces where Bradbury was saying that he realized what changed in Montag's life was Clarice. She entered his life and prompted him to ask questions and to think.
Well, and here, she was somebody he could talk with, but he'd already gone through that change. As you pointed out to me, it's like, it's when they're burning the lady in the house that was his moment in the film.
Well, and there was a hilarious bit where she basically opens her sweater or whatever, and she has the equivalent of the suicide bomber's vest.
Yeah, she's like duct-taped books around her.
Yes.
And I couldn't tell. I mean, it had that suicide bomber vest aspect to it, but it was also maybe she can sneak these out.
You know, to me it was just hilarious of, you know, the suicide bomber is going to take out who and what she can in the last hurrah.
Well, it's funny because that whole scene felt like it was almost not lifted out of the other film, but had the closest parallels to it. The layout of the library, the let's go up the stairs to it, all that kind of a thing. It was not verbatim. It's not like they recreated it, but it was eerily similar.
It had the closest with the shots of the books on fire and some of the beautiful cinematography, not quite as good, but close on the books burning. But it even ended with the same looking down from upstairs at all the flames.
I still think that the 66 film did a better job with the burning books and some of that. Some great camera work and cinematography there. This did okay, but it was never one of those... We really never got a bask in the fire kind of shot.
I had the feeling that the 66 movie didn't want to burn the books, but if they had to burn the books, it was going to be beautiful.
They weren't going to waste it.
Yes. Whereas this movie didn't want to burn the books, so they were only going to do it once if they did it. Well, otherwise, they were going to do effects and not practical burning, know what I mean.
The other difference here is this is filmed in the day and age of the internet. So the first thing they kind of crash into and are going isn't a bunch of books. It's basically an internet library, if you will, that they're uploading the stuff to.
Yeah.
And what they burn is the computers.
Yeah. Well, and this really broadened the context of what was contraband. In terms of in the book, it was just books, written word.
Yeah, here they included music, film, other stuff. And they're referring to it as graffiti.
Yeah, which I found amusing.
I thought that was well done. That to me felt like it was in the spirit of what Bradbury might have done.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, because, I mean, we had the actual film with the frames of Singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
And the fact that they picked an iconic scene that as they're looking at the frames, you can recognize.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was beautifully done. But to broaden it to kind of anything that inspires you, motivates you, makes you think, but also had that it's not about real people. It's fantasy. It's, I almost want to say, the flights of fantasy.
Well, and again, that was some of that dialogue of it's about unreal people or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
From the burning of the lady's house was very similar here in the previous film and taken straight from the book.
Yeah.
But in a way that it was that scene, those lines that had the clearest resonance between the three versions.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas while he was a fireman in all three, in the book, it was all about the hound and all of that stuff. In the 66 film, it was the fire pole. Here, it was really more about the camaraderie, the singing, the people than the place of the firehouse.
Well, and we had no sense of how reports were made, how alerts came in. And towards the end, it was very subtly implied that it was the Yuxi.
Their equivalent of Alexa.
Yeah.
Yeah, the smart app or whatever.
The Big Brother everywhere camera smart system.
Wasn't well explained. And at one point when he had said, go dark, and is reading a book out loud, I'm like, Montag, you idiot. You're going to turn this back on by telling it to turn back on, so you know it's listening.
Yeah.
So I think they could have done a little better there. There was also a few places where I think they were updating it for modern technology. When we get to a bar, everybody's kind of zoning out with VR stuff.
Which I loved, because they were really driving home the point that our technology was isolating us, even when we were in what ought to be a social environment.
Yeah, you're in there in groups and you're ignoring each other. I thought it was a smart update.
Yeah.
I also found it very interesting, all the city shots we got of these big skyscrapers that are acting as if they're TV screens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought that was really effective.
Yeah.
There were a couple of times where we'd get the emojis and all of that kind of stuff, and I couldn't tell what some of the emojis were supposed to be.
Mm.
And the use of the term eels.
I never got the eels. I figured it was something probably based off the salamanders, but I wanted an explanation.
Is it an acronym? Is it not? When they're wiping their fingerprint history or whatever, are they taking them out of the system? What exactly are they doing? There were a couple of things there that I just didn't quite get. It didn't throw me out of the story, but it was a little, if you're doing this, you need to explain it.
Yeah.
Or at least give me context. What's it mean?
Yeah, well, and if the fingerprints had been such, because there was an implication to me that Yuxi was responding to a voice print, not a fingerprint. So if having your fingerprints and your identity wiped kind of threw you out, because like we saw the fingerprint used to get on the train.
Yeah, I don't think they physically wiped the fingerprint, but at first I was wondering if they were like burning it off or something. But I think they were scanning it to take you out of the system because it goes back to the biometrics at the train station and such, which is funny because that was something that wasn't in the 66 film, but was in the book.
Yes. But I wanted an explanation of what burning you out of the system meant. Burning your history out. Because it sounded like they were destroying any record of you on social media, for instance. And there are some people today for whom that would be traumatic.
Well, it also seemed like they were exiling you in place for a period of time.
Yeah.
You're essentially as if you're going to prison, but they're not imprisoning you.
Yeah. Well, and it was kind of the, if you have that lack of identity, you can't get the good house. You can only get the, like, where Clarice lives, the cheap apartment, that kind of stuff.
You're effectively instantly homeless because all of your assets are inaccessible to you.
Yeah.
But that's, we've got to read into it to understand what that might be, and we're never quite sure.
Yeah.
Whereas I think if it was a little better written, Clarice could have explained it to us at some point or something.
But see, this goes back to what I said when we read the novel of it was so tightly written, so tightly woven. We didn't come out of it with a, I wish I understood this, or I wish he'd explain that.
Yeah, yeah.
He worked it all together.
Well, and there were a couple of places where that mindset was in this film. When we start at the fire station and they got this fighting match, I'm like, oh, well, I guess they're working out, whatever, but it seems to be a big deal. And then when they get to one of those places, I guess it was with the internet group.
Yes.
And they had to go fight the guys. It's like, oh, there are no police that are taking care of it. The firemen are that.
Yeah.
And it's funny because in the 66 film, we start to get some of that with them rousting the people in the park and a few things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Here, I think they did a better job of it.
Yeah.
And...
well, and here, I think they did a better job using the eye drops that were the pills in the book and in the 66 of just it's a custom medication in this one that's kind of guaranteeing you're happy by being a custom cocktail.
Well, and obliterating your past
so
you're not obsessing over it or remembering it.
Yeah.
But one of the other major differences here is Montag is single.
Yes.
So the drugs came in through the wife in both the film and the book. The plumber equivalents, if you will, coming in to you know, pump her stomach and do the transfusion to clean her up, doesn't happen at all here.
No, instead we get Clarice, who tells him, I realized when I stopped doing the drops, I could remember things.
But, well, her use is different here from the previous film, and a little bit more in line with the book, but still not. The dropping of the wife in this film, both films not having the professor. I mean, if you think about it, in the book, there were only 8-ish characters, and here we've taken a quarter of them out.
Yeah. Well, here we have no sense of relationships in this world. We know babies happen. We see a person with a baby.
But there's no sense. None of the people we're involved with have any family structure. At one point, Clarice has asked, do you remember your parents?
Yeah.
Because Montag is remembering his father. But the closest father-son relationship we've got here is Montag and the chief, who seems like he essentially stole him from this other guy.
Yeah.
And then tried to supplant Montag's memory of him.
Yeah.
Which I found interesting.
Well, I mean, if you go all the way back to the book, abortion was in the book, which honestly I kind of somehow read through, forgotten in a way. So I thought back on it, I'm like, oh yeah, that was in there and not in a good way, in a kind of a, this is the hazards of abortion.
Right, right.
Right. Then we get to the 66 movie, and they're not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
Don't blame them.
No.
It didn't come up here.
But at least in the movie, we had the marriage, but the marriage seemed almost more like roommates, which I'd give the book to.
Yeah, but when they bring in the wife's friends and get the, well, what about her husband and stuff like that, you at least get the sense of family life exists.
Mm-hmm.
Here, I didn't get that at all.
Exactly. And I think it was almost a, they couldn't figure out how to treat marriages because he's almost on a heroic journey to be adulterous.
Yeah.
And that goes back to Ray Bradbury envisioning this as a love affair between Montag and literature.
Which I didn't really get in this film.
No.
As for him being the hero, I'd kind of agree with that, but he doesn't come to a good end. He's heroic getting to there. I also think the whole concept of Omnis being introduced in the film kind of undercut the message.
Mm-hmm.
And it was undercut in and of itself by the kid who was introduced when it's, oh, well, Omnis, which is this, they've basically encoded all knowledge into a DNA strand and put it into a bird.
Yeah.
But when we're finding the bird, the bird's keeper is this kid who seems to be autistic and has memorized like 13,000 books.
Mm-hmm. But seems to die.
Does seem to die. Well, I'm going to say not seems to die. He seems to have died, but regardless, he's in a burning place and more flames are being shot his general direction. So I can't see how he could have made it out.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah.
Because at this point, Montag has gone to the equivalent of the book people. And this Omnis thing is going to be the MacGuffin that saves the world. And he needs to get the kid and the bird, thinking it's in the bird, to Canada.
Because that's how you save the world. You go to Canada. I just had to say it. It was filmed in Canada.
Yeah, that's that whole Canadian content. Canada must be good.
I'm just...
That's fine. What got me, though, is not that they had to go to Canada, but the bird seemed to know the way, because when he put the tracker on it for them, the Canadian scientists, to find it, it just seemed to make a beeline straight there.
I couldn't figure out where it was going, because it went over an ocean between Ohio and Canada.
Great Lakes, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I just, it ended with a, well, the bird got away, so all must be okay, not a heroic thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that was missing in this, that was predominantly missing from the other film too, was the war.
Yes, yes.
That we need to hang on to this knowledge because there's a coming Dark Ages, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to weather the storm and have it come out the other side to get to that next renaissance.
Yeah.
Whereas here, the war had already happened. There was a second civil war.
Yeah.
And it was a civil war, not an us versus them external kind of thing.
Which I think is kind of a commentary on the America we're living in, or it certainly felt we were living in 2 years ago.
Well, yeah, I think this is a contemporary twist on the story. And I think the whole we asked for this society is a comment on that, too.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly if you look at, you know, modern day reality where people are, you know, at best reading the headline for something that would take them to a 4-paragraph, quote unquote, article.
Yeah.
I get where this, we're summing it up and there's no content left mentality.
Well, and instead of going through the, we went to digests and then we stopped reading, they went to people only read the headlines and then they didn't even do that. And there is definitely, they kept the theme of what mattered wasn't giving people information, it's keeping people happy. And they do seem to walk a line between, it's not about entertaining people, it's about keeping people happy.
Yes. Well, placating them.
But it's an interesting line when you think about it, because when you think about the thing people watch in the name of entertainment, that doesn't necessarily leave them happy.
Well, it's not about making people happy, but more reducing them to where they don't have anything to be unhappy about.
Yeah.
You know, you're not elevating them to a status, you're whittling them down. And it's funny because I never got the sense that the average person in this world was either unhappy or kind of blissed out or whatever, because the wife in the previous film and in the book was incapable of thought for the most part.
Yes.
Whereas here, that didn't seem to be an issue for anybody.
Yeah. Well, for me, it felt like this movie kind of divided Montag between Montag and Beatty?
There was an aspect of Beatty in all three versions that seemed surprisingly well-read for somebody who shouldn't have been reading.
Yes.
Here, I think the stuff that we'd seen in the 66 film, where he was reading and using the dictionary and stuff, in place of that, we got Beatty scribbling notes or whatever.
Right, but it was Montag reading the dictionary.
I know, but
right.
that's my point, I think they split that version out to Beatty, to your point.
Yeah.
But that whole bit with Beatty just didn't work for me. I couldn't tell where they were going and why he was doing that.
Yeah.
It seemed like, oh, they're saying that a lot of these firefighters go through this stage of being curious, reading, and then kind of going down a dark path, and can they pull themselves back or not?
Well, I always took from the book Beatty's being shockingly well-read as kind of the people in power have the information and have chosen to withhold it from those not in power to keep them ignorant, to keep them powerless, etc.
I agree. I also took it in the novel that it was an age thing.
Mm, yes.
If you've got somebody who's, you know, we'll say, you know, 60-ish or whatever, he'd been around long enough, he'd read the stuff before the crackdown.
Yeah.
But with this timeline in this film, that doesn't quite hold water.
Yeah.
I think visually they did some stuff that was pretty cool in this. Mm-hmm. I think they had a better world sensibility for me. Because again, there were a couple of things with the 66 film that felt foreign, both almost in a European, non-American kind of way. Not that that's bad, but it just felt different.
Detaches us from it.
It detaches, right. And also, half a century of time difference.
Mm-hmm.
This was both more contemporary and more North American comfortable.
Yeah.
That helped. It's funny because I think they had the opportunity to do some things here, like the Hound and some stuff like that. I don't think they suffered by not having done that.
No, but they took out... I don't think they know they did it, but they took out the final chase.
Yeah, the final chase, I think, was a mistake to take out because I think this world was set up for it.
Yeah.
But they didn't have anywhere for him to run to,
mm-hmm.
and nobody to explain how the chase resolves.
Yeah.
And if they were going to do that, they should have set up the opening with the internet guys better, to where that was televised. Let's go with it.
Yeah. I mean,
they had aspects of that.
Mm-hmm.
They were perfectly set up for it. I just don't think they realized how well that aspect of the book would have played in their film.
Yeah. Yeah, because it would have been beautiful. And yet when we got to where it should be, they seemed to feel like they had a chase.
Well, the closest...
But they didn't.
They came to it was when the lady whose house gets burned down yells Omnis, and they replace it with coward.
Well, no, yes. That,
so that's the whole faking the news thing.
That is. But I'm thinking when Montag is on the run at the end, and the firemen manage to beat him to where he's running to.
Yeah, somehow their AI system knew where he was going to go in this black hole dead zone area, and they got there first.
I mean, he's running after not killing Beatty, which is a big
difference, but he killed the other guy.
You know, but so when he heads out running, I'm like, okay, you've given us the society for the chase scene, you've given us the technology for the chase scene, and yet it doesn't feel like you're going to play it out.
Yeah, I think they pulled their punch there, and they could have really played up the social media aspect, mm-hmm. the celebrity aspect,
mm-hmm.
and made it to where there was no way he could get out.
Yeah.
And if it had been, hey, go down the river, sail down, whatever,
mm-hmm.
that would have... I think they were set up for it. I'm disappointed they didn't go that way.
Well, and it would have been funny given they'd had Huck Finn in there. I mean, they had ways that they, if they had done after someone had shown him Huck Finn, if someone else had said, basically, people think Huck Finn is burned purely because it's written in contraband, but the real reason it's burned is these days it's directions to a safe haven.
You know, it's funny with you saying that. I can almost imagine a original series MacGyver episode they could have done with him dreaming he's in this Fahrenheit 451 kind of a world, and he's able to get through all of these things through a combination of MacGyverisms from books.
Yeah.
You know? Shame they never did that, because I think they could have done a great job with it.
Yeah.
So, this is, I think, the version that at one point Mel Gibson was trying to direct, that they thought about getting Tom Cruise for, or Brad Pitt, and it just didn't go that way. Michael B. Jordan not only starred in it, but he was an executive producer. Makes us wonder if it was a passion project for him.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't surprise me if it was. Ironically, you know, he's the second person in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that had played Johnny Storm outside the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but in Marvel movies, because he was in Fantastic Four as the Human Torch. As was Chris Evans from the previous Fantastic Four films. But I just thought that was kind of funny. So he goes from playing a man of fire into a fire man.
Well, and I liked the way he did the scenes where he first gets hold of a book, in terms of, it's not that he doesn't know how to read, it's that he understands that it's kind of like reading Shakespeare for the first time. You may recognize the words, but you don't fully understand what they mean or how they come together.
Well, and reading it versus understand the cadence and the delivery.
Yeah.
And that's something that reading a book to yourself is very different than reading it aloud.
Yeah.
And for me, reading to myself, not a problem. But you want me to read aloud, again, you've got to, it's a different set of muscles for me. I always hated that in high school and stuff, of, hey, read the next paragraph aloud. It's, you know, I want to know what I'm saying before I'm saying it. And, you know, I read and I talk at different speeds.
When I used to babysit and put kids to bed, one of the things that I didn't care for was when kids would say, read me my favorite bedtime story, because you don't read it to them the way their parents do.
Yep. Yep.
And kids are very sensitive to that. So what I started doing was having the kids pull out the book and asking them to read it to me.
Mm.
And the version you get, especially from like a 2-year-old who can't read.
Yeah, but they can know when the page flips are, sort of.
They know the page flips and they know the kinds of things they're used to hearing with each page. You get some hilarious bedtime stories that way.
Well, and that's something else that I'm surprised was not in the novel or either of the films is... a book, while it can have a lot of knowledge and information in there, the mechanism of delivery is a very information-poor vehicle.
Mm.
You get the sentence, but you don't get the intonation. You don't get, is it funny, is it happy, is it sad? You don't get the emotion of it or the delivery of it. And how the same passage could be taken multiple different ways, depending on that.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of places where, particularly when they're burning the house and talking about all these things, one says this is true, the other says it's false, it confuses people. There was an opportunity in that diatribe to really go into, this is why books are bad. You can't ask questions. You can't understand what they really meant. You only see what they wrote.
Yeah.
And how reductive that could be. But that's arguably also one of the powers of a book.
Mm-hmm. Well, one book that both movies took the time to burn, but I don't recall it being named and burned in the novel, was Mein Kampf.
Yeah, both kind of pointed that one out and focused on it. It was not in the book. The other one that was in this one that obviously wasn't going to be in the book, or the other one, was Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Thought that was kind of funny. They tried to be a little topical.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, if that gets people reading, it could take a kid, oh, wait, they're burning that. Okay, this is serious now.
Well, because I had Googled Fahrenheit 451 before we did this, that now comes up on my related headlines thing. And I had a headline the other night that apparently one of the writers for The Daily Show decided to post on Twitter my kid came home not too long ago with a sign this permission slip from his English teacher so that he could read Fahrenheit 451 in class, because in past years she's gotten complaints from parents because there wasn't a permission slip for this book.
Getting a permission slip to read a book
to read a book about the censorship of books being read.
Yeah, that one just...
And so his son had written him a very polite letter saying, "Dad, my teacher's afraid you'll be offended if I read a book where the Bible is burned and one or two other things, right? So please sign this slip saying I can read it." So he signed the slip, and then he wrote the teacher back a note that basically said, "This is so clever of you to have them stop and think about whether or not they can read a book before reading a book about whether or not they can read a book."
Well, and there's a certain amount of, oh, if I might not get permission, I'm more interested in it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a little bit of a mind game there, too, possibly. That's just kind of crazy.
Oh, and the teacher had pointed out that some parents had complained about the profanity in the book because damn and hell are used.
I don't consider personally either of those to be profanity. Again, I tend to go with that kind of mythical FCC ruling, you know, kind of concept. But there is no clear-cut line on what is or isn't profanity, which is why I tend to err on the side of caution.
Well, and I found it fascinating that the teacher had explained all these things to the students when handing out the permission slip.
Yeah.
So basically, the students were exposed to all the concepts before reading the book.
Interesting way to prep them.
Yeah.
Because I think if you go into it not knowing what it's about or not in the right mindset, a lot of it could just be lost on you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you came into this film thinking it's about arson.
Yeah.
You know, versus why are they doing what they're doing, and the whole concept of, with a concerted effort within a generation, and I don't mean the 30 years between generations, I mean from one generation being born to that 80 to 100 years later when they all die.
Yeah.
Over that time, you could completely rewrite history and society if you've got a forced enough effort and there's not a backlash of people trying to preserve what was before.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone's, well, this is what I grew up with. It's always been this way. And once you've gotten that one generation that remembers prior to that, and they're gone, and now everybody's just been indoctrinated this way, that knowledge could be lost forever.
Yeah.
You know, I remember at one point that there was, whether it's accurate or not, and this was maybe 30 years ago, that human knowledge was like doubling every 5 years or something like that. I mean, it had accelerated. You looked at, you know, 100 years ago, it wasn't going that fast. Now it's just faster and faster. With the internet, with computers, with the bigger population, with the better education, stuff like that. But it was being balanced out by the fact that most of us know less of the overall knowledge because there's more of it.
Yeah.
You know, and to put it in pop culture terms, 30-ish years ago, most Americans knew what was on the popular TV show last night.
Yeah.
Because there were really the three networks.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, most people may not even know what was on last night, much less know anything about that episode. You know, the days of MASH getting, you know, everybody to watch it for its finale are gone.
Yeah.
So we're living in times that are changing, and the rate of change is escalating, and the risk of backsliding as a culture, as a planet, into abject stupidity out of apathy, out of people trying to control information or distort information, is crazy. It's scary. And it's plausible.
Mm.
You know, when you've got people claiming things are true to get their way, to because they don't believe it, or just because they're wrong or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at a movie like this where it is so clearly trying to control the culture through the flow of information. You know, it's definitely lessons that I think people need to be aware of, need to learn, and hopefully not relearn and relearn and relearn.
Well, and as Bradbury said, this wasn't a predictive story. It was a preventative.
Yeah, it was a cautionary tale of let's not go this way.
Yeah.
And that whole concept of some people thinking that all sci-fi is trying to guess what the future is going to be because they want that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the best sci-fi is a look at contemporary problems, placing them into a future setting to where they're safer to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And either, well, this could go wrong, or you know, it could go this way. And let's do a thought experiment. What would happen if? Some are, wouldn't this be cool? Some are, wouldn't this be horrible? Some are, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, and this was very much a, we could be heading down this path, let's not. And here we are, you know, decades later, and the message is still relevant.
Yes.
Meaning, we haven't totally learned the lesson as a society. Yet. Hopefully we will. The other thing that was missing here that I think was in mentioned in the book, done in the first film, comics.
Yes.
The fact that the newspaper in the previous film was, in my opinion, poorly drawn, wordless comics. Here, that whole concept just wasn't.
Yeah. There were no comics, there were no phones in this film.
Yeah. People just seemed to walk around, and at the bar they had the VR headsets, but otherwise there was no Walkmans. There were, again, music was outlawed too. There were no radios, there were no Kindles, there were no books, there were...
Yeah.
I never understood in this world how people spent their time, whereas we got that discussion in the book and in the other film.
Yeah.
So I thought this was well done. I think it was more accessible, more contemporary for the modern age, which I think is good. I think there are a couple of places where they missed some opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
One or two where you could argue they missed the boat a little bit. I was not overjoyed by the ending.
No, I wasn't.
Because
I got the impression that the book people were all arrested, didn't make it a good place. So to me, it was not as hopeful an ending as the other movie book.
I think they thought it was more hopeful because the bird got away.
Yeah, sorry, no.
I'll admit, them wandering around in the last film muttering the lines was a little annoying. And I think this one was, the ending was undercut, not just by the bird and everybody dying, but the bird was undercut by the autistic kid who'd memorized everything and them showing that off. And I really preferred the aspect of the book where it's not that people memorized the book, it's that they had techniques that anything you read they could pull out of you. Which would have made, hey, he's an avid reader. We can pull it out of him later. Not that he had to memorize it all.
Mm-hmm.
So, still, fun film. Interesting to compare the two films in the book and just see how they're like, how they're different, and what each director felt was filmable and what wasn't, and what would translate well to the film.
Okay.
And how to adapt it to the era they were in.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.